depends on what part of the country you live in. Well, that's
this
true.
Is blind, here, blind like me, is what this is called. Hello there, I'm Phil Parr, and you're not.
No.
And the Gassmans at last. Gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, we're doing fine.
Larry and John.
This only took a couple of years, and you haven't been on the air that long.
I haven't. Let me start my exciting Radio Shack watch. Speaking of exciting, is it? Oh, hell, it didn't start.
You know, you get more reaction when you start it that way than I do mine, because mine's Braille.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't get... Mine is not going to do here. All clear. It said all clear. All right, here we go.
It didn't say you have questions, we have answers. So are you sure it's a Radio Shack watch?
They don't have answers. That's the problem.
I think it was probably initially a watch that came out of the Navy.
They get guys at Radio Shack that obviously, you know, just you just never go into Radio Shack and find a guy. I need a, you know, so-and-so. What's that, then? Do we have it in the catalog? You know. Just,
you know, have you ever gone into Radio Shack and found out that you know less than the guy who actually waits on you?
No, I'd shoot myself. I did. You know, it's always a Radio Shack. He's a Radio Shack. He's not even smart enough to work at Radio Shack.
And then there's the speaking issue. Isn't it true? If they can speak at all, then they should probably be promoted to manager.
Yeah. Go in and try to buy I want a quarter-inch jack stereo that goes to two RCAs. And these folks are just nuts. What is that? You know?
Yeah, they turn and they go, hey, could we find what was that again?
Yeah, it's amazing.
They're in good shape as long as you ask for a vanilla shake and fries.
That's right. If they know the item, if it's up on the counter and they know it, God, wouldn't it be awful to be boycotted by Radio Shack, not be able to buy anything there? We won't sell you, because I'd depend on Radio Shack. I don't know how to live without them.
Yeah, they're pretty nice.
They are wonderful, and wonderful folks work there too. We love them.
Round
of applause.
You know, you got to say that. You never know when you're going to interview somebody who's blind who used to work at Radio Shack.
That's right, a blind guy that used to work at Radio Shack.
Absolutely.
Well, welcome to Blind Like Me. You all have your twins, really twins?
Yes, we really are.
Yes, we really are. You're born close to the same time.
About 3 minutes apart. 1 pound 8 ounces. I was 1 pound 10 ounces. We were 2.5 months premature. My wife likes to call us. Originally, maybe macho burrito size. We were 13 inches long.
And you have other siblings that can see?
We have another brother and another sister.
And they're both, they can see or not?
They can see.
They can see. So when where are you? You're the oldest or the youngest or what?
We're the oldest. We were born during we were born in 55, so we were born during the phase where we actually got too much oxygen.
Yeah, you're the third person today I've talked to that's happened to, and I don't understand that. They had control of that. They could have not given you too much oxygen.
They didn't know how much to give us at the time. They'd been experimenting.
We just didn't have the scientific knowledge at that time, you think?
I don't think. I think the other option is we could have died, and so I think probably they figured
out. Oh, well.
You know, there is that. So they might as well give us too much oxygen. Otherwise, we could never have appeared on Blind Like Me.
And Survivor wasn't around like that at the time, so we weren't voted off the earth or anything like that.
No, but there's still time.
Did you hear last week I did this guy named Kent Cullors, who's a physicist?
I am aware of him, and I've heard about him, but I didn't get a chance to hear it because it's not up on the site yet.
It's not?
No.
That's our new interim director is just not keeping up real well.
Well, he's probably busy.
Probably is.
I can't imagine the kind of job that must be to make sure that every single show that's being recorded live and or on tape through Memorex gets up on the site in a timely manner.
You must mean all 14 hours a week of programming they're doing, and I'm doing two of them. That's what you must mean.
Absolutely.
All right, all right.
Yep.
Anyway, sure, hope he's not probably take us off. But anyway, Ken Cullors was telling me about these signals he receives from stars and things, you know, I said, you mean there's life on other planets? And he assured me that we wouldn't announce that on Blind Like Me if it were true.
I thought you were talking about stars like Mariah Carey and people like that.
People like that.
You're talking about other planets.
Other planets, yeah.
Wow.
He's quite a guy. You need to call him and talk to him.
I have never talked to him, although he's been out here several times here, meaning Southern California,
yeah,
of course, and he has appeared at seminars and other things like that. So I've heard a lot about him. I've just never had the chance to meet him.
I think he's the only blind physicist I've ever heard of. Getting a degree in physics would be a hell of a job, even if you could see.
Absolutely.
And this guy did it with Braille. I mean, he's old enough. There really weren't. There were kind of computers in, but there were, you know, Apple IIe's and that kind of stuff.
They took the size of one room. I mean, they certainly weren't compact like they are now.
God bless the computer. Didn't that liberate us so much?
You know, I mean, it used to be because when John and I first got into computers, and this was, 97? not that long ago.
Yeah.
But we couldn't believe the fact that we were then able to deal with our own lives as we wanted to deal with them. We didn't have to realize that rely on somebody else to scan something for us. We could go up on the web page and do it ourselves. If we wanted to skip something, it was up to us to skip it. Because you have to rely to some degree on people. That's just the way it is. But to have that kind of freedom on a daily basis to go up and read when I want to read, to look up something, to research something, is just something that I don't think I'll ever take for granted again.
It was a major breakthrough. And with the computer, of course, we'll never be able to draw graphics. There'll be a lot of things we can't do, but there's so much we can.
Absolutely.
I fought learning. My wife pulled me kicking and screaming into the computer age, and I bless her heart for doing it. Of course, wives pulling you kicking and screaming is always fun, as you boys know.
Absolutely.
All right. Where are we? I'm going to mix me a drink. Let's go back to kind of your childhood. I guess as well adjusted as you are, your parents treated you pretty normal, did they? How did they do it? Two blind children.
They treated us like anybody else, actually.
That's right. It's what they should have done.
But they didn't have any real inkling of how to treat blind people. Luckily enough for us, they had instincts, and that was, let's treat them like anybody else. But they did all kinds of research. They called organizations like the Braille Institute and the Foundation for the Junior Blind and other organizations and said, we've got these two hyper young blind people here. What do we do? And the answers they got back was treat them like anybody else, and they did. They didn't shelter us. They didn't necessarily like the fact that we would cross streets and or jump off high dives and or run everywhere, but they never stopped us from doing it.
Yeah. And so you rode tricycles and bikes when you were kids and did all the most of the normal things. It didn't really dawn on me that I was any different than any other kids until I went to school.
That's true. You know? I think I still have my forehead imprinted on a couple of trees.
Oh, yeah. I remember, you know, tripping over bricks and landing flush on and cutting my head open. I remember sliding down a jungle gym and not realizing at that moment that there was no center pole. And so I cut my tongue open. This just childhood stuff that happens. We when we went to school, we ran everywhere. We ran into fences. We did all kinds of lovely things. Are you there still?
Yeah.
I heard a click.
Somebody picked up a phone somewhere.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was. Me. Oh, it was my wife, Melinda.
Hi, Melinda.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I was just listening to the interview.
All right.
How are you doing?
We're okay. We're just stumbling along here like blind people do.
Yeah, we do. Except we're not in the dark.
You have an awesome radio voice.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate that.
I can beat all the stories because I know a guy rode a bike through a plate glass window.
Oh, geez.
And lived to tell it.
He's
totally, absolutely, totally had his partially sighted guy with him that I've always thought prompted him to do it.
See, I think it would be kind of cool to try it.
Riding through, yeah?
I don't know that necessarily I would like the after effects.
Well, you know, that's really weird because when my kids were little, I let my son shoot me with a BB gun because I wanted to know what it felt like.
Oh, you are special.
Well, I am. I just special. And it hurt. It hurt. But I told him to do it, so there's nothing I could do about it.
I remember
when we were talking about it at parties.
Yeah, it is.
I remember in the third and fourth grade, we got to the point where we ran everywhere so much that the teachers got together with the principal and with our parents. And said, if they're going to be here at school, and that's fine because we have no problems being here at school, and it was a regular school, it wasn't a blind school,
We
need to make them wear catcher's masks because we were running into everything. We didn't walk anywhere, we ran. So for a couple of years, every time we went to school, from the time we got on the bus to the time we got off, we had to wear catcher's masks that had the bars going, you know, up and down and across.
Yeah.
So that when we hit something, and we did, we wouldn't run into it. And so we would walk up to poles just to see what the sound it would be like to actually bang those masks into the poles. Didn't hurt us at all. And I remember John, I never did this because I wasn't that stupid, but I remember John got up on top of a fence once and jumped off of it. Remember, John?
Yeah, I still don't remember why I did that.
And landed on his mask because he figured, gee, with the mask on, it certainly can't hurt as much as it would have with the mask off, right?
It did.
It did?
I did.
I thought so.
How high was the fence?
Not very high. It was maybe 4 or 5 feet up. Yeah. something.
But you were a little guy then.
Yeah, and, so and it was a lot higher.
4 or 5 feet up is a long way to fall if you're real little.
Yeah.
Well, see, I had a brother who is deceased, long since deceased, that was blind, that helped me. So I had a not an exact situation, but a kind of a similar, because he'd already done a lot of the things I was going to do. But he wasn't as brave as I am. He wouldn't ride a bike. He was very studious and very scholarly. He didn't do the things I did. He didn't fight with the other kids, or he didn't do the what I considered normal things. I don't, you know, I just did everything all the other kids did, and y'all did too, I guess.
Do you used to play tackle football in the street?
Well, I didn't do that.
Oh, we did that.
Yeah, we did that, and we had to maneuver around the cars, which were parked there. I broke a guy's finger one time accidentally. I bent it the wrong way when I hit him.
But then you could hear a lot better. You could hear the cars.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I could have run and dodged a car then that would loom suddenly in front of me because I could hear well enough.
Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that you're even building up that ability to hear and to discover spatial relationships. You don't think about that kind of stuff until later. You just do it while you're doing it.
Well, enjoy it while you have it, because you're going to lose it.
I hope not.
Y'all are 48 or 49,
yeah.
and I'm 63, and it's about gone. I can't. I there was a time, and y'all could do the same thing. I'm sure. I sold brooms on a broom crew, and they had a truck and trailer that were very close together because the trailer was hitched to the truck. I could walk down the street and stop it in my car because I could tell they were closer together than the park cars.
Uh-huh.
But
okay.
No more. That's gone, and it could happen to you. I mean, you know.
So you don't hear anymore. In other words, you can't hear something beside you. Or
I have to make a lot of noise. I have to clap my hands or stomp my feet or make a lot of noise to hear the echo. And used to, I just took it for granted. I could, you know, I walked. I didn't use a cane till I got grown.
Wow.
I didn't need one.
Yeah, we never did till high school, only because they never had a rehab guy come out and teach us. That's why we used to run everywhere. And then along about high school, they introduced us to the cane, and so we've been using it ever since.
But they sent you, your parents sent you to a regular,
right.
We call it just a public school.
Regular public school, but we did have a resource room in case we needed tests read or anything like that. And they would have, you know, a couple people there who obviously were able to teach the blind in terms of being able to read things like that. Or we were taught Braille through that. Way as well, but yeah, it wasn't a school for the blind. It was just a resource room.
But they did start teaching you Braille at an early age.
Yeah, that was like what, kindergarten?
I think so.
Yeah,
and it made a big difference. I mean, because I still read Braille to this day.
That's what I was going to say. Both of you are Braille readers.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't read everything in Braille. I probably read most of the books I read now are probably through NLS and on cassette because I have a long commute to work.
Yeah.
And it's just easier, and Braille is very bulky, and it's tough to carry all that stuff. But I certainly do read Braille. I've got phone numbers and addresses and things like that in Braille. And I get things, some books still in Braille, you know. So I certainly keep my hand in.
Well, the note-taker makes it easier, too, to store it, which is very convenient.
Yeah.
Sure. I guess with a note-taker, you can you put a book on there and refresh every line, or can you do that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they've got a sufficient memory now where you can do that.
So that'd be a kind of a way to carry books around. I mean, I do that.
John does it. I haven't gotten that far yet. I've got a Braille note, but I haven't yet been able to actually download stuff. I haven't had the time to do it, but I would like to learn how to do it because I understand from people who've done it that it's terrific. You can download a book, and if you're at the airport or if you're on your way to the job, you can read a whole book in Braille.
And, you know, everybody I talk to, I'm the only one that can't read Braille. I just never, I think I was Braille, I could not keep my place. I could read the art, I just couldn't keep my place. I could read one line, but when I scooted my hands back, I was lost.
That's funny, because you wouldn't think that would be the case with somebody who was born blind.
Well, but it is, because I taught Braille for 2 or 3 years before I got my current job at Braille Institute, and I ran into a few people like that who were totally blind. They just had navigational skills, and I don't know if that carried over toward to their mobility skills or not, but I know it did in terms of their navigating a page.
I met blind people with better mobility skills than mine who had a better, who could get around better, but I've met a whole lot who were much worse. I always figured I was about in the middle in terms of spatial, awareness. So I could do that all right, and I can play the guitar and piano and all kind of things, but I just couldn't. Anyway, so Braille was a big part of your schooling. They got you books in Braille and brought you lessons in Braille, and you had a resource teacher there. Were there other blind people there at this public school?
Yes. There were a few. I don't think any more than maybe three or four or five. I mean, it wasn't a big class. But they all had their regular classes that they went to, and then for one period a day, they'd come in, and if something needed to be read or they maybe were working on Braille or something, for one period a day, they would have the resource class where they could take advantage of whatever help there was.
Yeah. Let's do a little quick break and...
Space Telescope has been bringing images of distant galaxies and neighboring planets into view since 1990, but only for those who can see. Now a new book by NASA is helping to make stargazers out of the visually impaired. Touch the Universe, a NASA Braille book of astronomy, brings Braille text and photographs of some of the universe's most dramatic celestial features. Images of newborn stars in the Eagle Nebula, for example, become visible to the fingertips by embossing the most dominant features on a thick paper. Raised lines follow the object's shapes, various textures, dots, parallel lines, squiggles, and curves. Identify planets, gas clouds, stars, and galaxies. Another photo, called the Hubble Deep Field, reveals the most detailed view of the minuscule slice of the cosmos, with about 1,500 galaxies, some of which date back to the beginning of the universe. This book showed me galaxies that are far away and what they look like through a telescope, said a freshman at the Colorado School for the Deaf and Blind in Colorado Springs. Illustrations comparing the size of Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus are also insightful. This was something that I couldn't grasp before. Terry Garnett, who aspires to be the first blind person in space, quoted, "This book has made me want to pursue this goal even more." For more information on the book Touch the Universe, visit the web at nationalgeographic.com/NASA or Braille Astronomy. On the Blind Side, I'm Mark Christie.
On the Blind Side, celebrating the contribution of blind people to societal evolution.
From California, and I don't need to be able to tell your voices apart to know which is which. Doesn't make any difference, does it?
Huh? Not to us, it doesn't.
Well, it doesn't to me either.
No.
If it's good enough for you, it's certainly good enough for me. What at some point in time you began developing you've raised together and you've been brothers and buds all your lives, but at some point you obviously decided that we can do comedy or we can do radio or we can. I mean, tell me. Did you both fall in love with radio at the same time, or what? Tell me about that.
I think we did. Just growing up and listening to radio, we always had an appreciation for it. And then in college, we got to work at the college radio station and loved it. That's where we learned how to do Top 40 and commercial radio and that kind of thing, and knew enough at that point that we didn't really want to get into it commercially, but we liked doing it. And so... at around the same time, I think we'd also started collecting the old radio programs initially through Braille Institute, when they used to have the stuff available as a lending library.
They used to send out lending tapes of radio shows.
On open reel.
And
I have no idea who started the collection, but I know that we used to get them. And they were okay. They were high-speed duplicated, so their sound was just okay. But it was the idea to actually be able to hear these shows that was kind of neat, and we thought, gee, these would be fun to copy and maybe play for friends. And, God, the collection grew from there. Then we met other people who lived close to us, and they started a radio organization as well in Southern California, and then we began to get together with people from across the country. And before we knew it, we had a fairly large collection of radio shows, and there were people doing the shows on the air out here as well as across country. And we filled in for some of them at the time, and then eventually got our own show in 1980, which lasted over 20 years.
So we did we played the shows on the air, talked about them, and interviewed a lot of the people who did the radio shows.
Probably 300 or 400.
Yeah.
Of course, now there's a dearth of old-time radio. I mean, there are several places on the net that sell it, there's a lot. But back when you started, it was, I mean, if you had a collection of four or five Fibber McGee and Molly's, well, you were just, that was knocked out.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't heard that in 100 years.
No.
And there was no old-time radio back then. There was no way to get it. There was no way. And I didn't understand this, the Braille Institute. And so you folks copied those reel-to-reels.
Right. This is 1970, 1971.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we also had a chance to eventually get a hold of the original transcription discs that the people, our friends in the business, allowed us to copy, and so we were able to.
Because by that time we knew the actors and the actresses from interviewing them.
Yeah.
And we had them on the radio show. We interviewed them for the radio organizations, etc. And they trusted us. And they said, you know, I'd love to be able to hear these shows again. Could you copy them? And so we had the equipment, and so we were able to do that for them. Not just us. It certainly wasn't just us.
Oh, no.
A lot of people have been able to do that, but we were lucky enough to do it and help them retain copies of things that they had done 50 and 60 years ago.
So they had transcriptions, but they had no way to play them.
Right.
And you had the big 16-inch turntable set up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could play these, and you had a way to dump them to an MPEX reel-to-reel.
Mm-hmm.
Or a reel-to-reel of some kind. So you made copies for some of the actual performers who had worked on these shows.
Mm-hmm.
In 72, I moved to Lufkin, Texas, where I am now, and I took over management of a little radio station, a little 1,000-watt daytimer. And I got an offer in the mail, 25 Lone Rangers. Would I like to run those? And I ran the Lone Ranger every Friday afternoon at 4:30. And they said work at Temple Industries, which is our big industry, stopped at 4:30 on Friday afternoons.
Really?
Just knocked me out. Because I had no idea anybody would want to listen to it. I just thought, what the hell? What are they going to do? It's my radio station. I'll do what I want to. And they said this works. You know, all the machines shut down. The plant stopped at 4:30 on Fridays. That ought to tell you something. You know?
Absolutely. Out here, KNX, which is one of the major stations around Southern California and throughout the country, they had been playing the old radio shows for 20 years, and it was number one in its time slot every night.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They just stopped doing it because they thought that they should continue with 24 hours of news, which was a dumb decision on their part. But, you know, they pay the bills. I don't know.
Well, Clear Channel probably bought it.
No, they're actually owned by Affinity.
Infinity does this one.
Infinity.
Yeah.
Well, they're a little better than Clear Channel. I know a guy's worked for Clear Channel and gotten fired 3 times.
Oh, wow, really?
Looked like you'd learned.
And that was on a good day.
Yeah. So you boys went through school, same grade. Neither one of you failed. You make good grades in school. Did you do well in high school?
We did well. We got our share of A's and B's and things like that. We did pretty well.
And played in the street with the other kids and both decided to go to the same college or different colleges or one?
We went to junior college. We both went to Rio Hondo College, which is in Whittier, and got our associate degrees, and both decided to go to Cal Poly Pomona, which was a school maybe 45 minutes away, and both got degrees in communications, speech communications.
Uh-huh.
Didn't do a lot with them because it was tough to get into that field.
It is.
Yeah.
We used it when we did the radio show and then when we ultimately broadcast the Rose Parade. So it came in handy, but not in terms of commercial work.
But you would have probably gotten to do all the things you did in radio without the degree in communications.
Yes.
And that didn't... The degree in communications doesn't... always hated to hire a kid with a degree in communications because they thought they knew more than I did.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted them to do things the way I wanted them. I hired kids from Columbia School of Broadcasting who barely knew how to cue a record, and that way you could teach them
right
the way you wanted things done. But you both got degrees in communication, so you have a college degree. So good. I mean, that's something in and of itself.
Yeah.
It can't hurt anything.
No.
So you got out of college, and all during college you worked at the college radio station? Or the what? You said you worked at an NPR station or what, that you had so much fun?
That was all voluntary. From say, 1980 till, I guess, March of 2000.
We did the radio show for KPCC, which was in Pasadena. It still is.
Mm-hmm.
And we played the shows. We interviewed the people who worked on the shows for 20 years. We did 5 Rose Parades, I guess, for National Public Radio and for KPCC in Pasadena as well, which was a lot of fun.
Okay, but this public radio station is where you got all the players of old-time radio to interview and talk with.
We did that. Yeah, I chaired 20 radio conventions for SpurredVac, which is a radio organization that's out here in Southern California.
Yeah.
So we organized recreations, workshops, and things like that. And a lot of those people were on the radio show as well.
You got some of the old-time radio actors to participate in your things at the convention?
Oh, yeah.
What a deal.
Oh, yeah.
What a deal.
And they loved it because, you know,
sure.
How many calls would they get to actually go in and do a radio show? Not very many.
Who ever heard of them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows about Fibber McGee and Molly? Nobody.
They were just happy that people remembered, and then a lot of people remember to this day.
Yeah.
And so we did the recreations. We didn't do any recreations, I don't think, while we were on the air, but we did a few cast reunions of people because they could do all that stuff from their home for the most part. Some of them came in studio. Others who were living in other parts of the country, we would call them on the phone, and they could spend a couple of hours together talking about old times. We'd play clips. We'd let them talk. We'd learn. Everybody would learn, and those were some of the most fun things I think we ever had a chance to do.
So you would conference everybody together.
Right.
And you would tape the thing so for your use later or whatever.
Well, most of those things were done live, but we would tape them, you know, so that we would have a record of it later on.
So you've amassed a tremendous collection of not only the old-time radio shows, but interviews with I guess you taped everything you did.
Oh, yeah.
My heavens. What a deal.
And everything we did for other organizations, you know, other stations and things like that, because somebody would say, are you going to be at the convention in, say, New Jersey? And we'd say, yeah. Oh, then so-and-so's going to be there. Why don't you go see if you can get a hold of them? And so, for instance, Hyman Brown, who did the Mystery Theater, and did Inner Sanctum before that, Ralph Bell, people who were not interviewed that much, we were lucky enough to get them, and we chatted with them for a while. And so it wasn't just out here in California. It was wherever we happened to be. Because we realized that in a few years, you know, those people are going to be gone. And somebody needs to record them and record their memories so that they're not going to be lost.
Yeah, because the days of old-time radio died in the mid-50s. I mean, it was over.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
CBS continued with Gunsmoke.
Mm-hmm. And yours truly, Johnny Dollar and Suspense, but essentially that was pretty much it.
That was pretty much it. I think it seemed like during the late 50s, if I'm not mistaken, NBC did a little 15-minute 2-a-day of Fibber McGee and Molly.
They did, yeah. That was on Monitor.
Monitor.
Yeah, they did. Monitor.
I remember Monitor so
small
well.
Small little bit.
I remember Monitor so well. Do you have a tape of Monitor?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I've got a website. I'll have to find it and send it to you. Somebody did a whole huge website about Monitor with audio clips as well. This is from when it started in 50, whatever it was, 55 or 56.
That's something they were sure was going to work and didn't. And it just didn't work. I mean, it wasn't. And I don't know why it didn't work, because people were in cars listening to radios.
Well, it lasted into the 70s. It changed. It evolved into different things. But it was around for a long time.
I didn't realize that it was on until the 70s.
Uh-huh.
I do remember that one of the funny things about Monitor is every Saturday night at 8:30 Central Time, they did the Grand Ole Opry. Monitor be damned.
Huh.
They did the Grand Ole Opry on NBC. Did the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday nights because I was listening. I'm a country music nut. That's my passion, and I always listen to the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday nights. Here, Rod Brasfield, Minnie Pearl, and all those old Red Foley and the old singers.
Oh yeah.
And they interrupted Monitor to do the from the Ryman Auditorium the old Grand Ole Opry. So there's a website. Well, email me that.
Yeah, I will.
So I've got to hear, because I remember Monitor so well. I didn't listen every weekend, but I tuned in. I thought it was a great, man, this is a great idea. The rest of the networks are sitting on their bands. And so let me see, what time are we here? We're 26. All right, so do you folks have a website up of offering old-time radio things or not?
We don't. Got a friend who hosted our radio show for a lot of years, and he's got. So we're on his website. We've got some stuff on there, and he talks about us.
But you're not trying to sell what you've got.
No.
No.
No. We never got into that. I know we've got a lot of friends who do that, but we never did. Because we just didn't want to deal with any copyright problems or anything like that. So we just decided, we're not going to do that. Other people have, and that's fine.
Well, the only other thing I guess you could do is set up a museum of some kind. Because a lot of this stuff needs to be, I think, shared with someone. The only thing, other thing I could think of is...
There are museums. Unfortunately, the problem is that a lot of them are targeted more toward television because that tends to sell from a marketing perspective more than would the old radio shows. They found that out with the Museum of Television and Radio in New York and in Beverly Hills. Chicago does a better job of selling their radio stuff, but even they have a lot of TV stuff because that's where the money is, such as it is, for people who come in and visit.
But Chicago has a lot. I've been to the Chicago one. They have a lot of radio, too.
Yeah, they do.
They've got more than any place I've ever been.
Yeah, Chuck Shaden, who's a longtime friend and did still does a show in Chicago, donated all of his material to that museum. So they're very well aware of what radio is, and they care about radio. In fact, they still host the Radio Hall of Fame Awards every year.
But currently, you are not in any project to get your collection to the public or to share it with anyone.
Not right now. Once Larry decided that he was going to get married, we had to put everything in storage, so the show came to an end rather quickly.
It wasn't just me.
Well,
but certainly the fact that I was going to get married. You had some stuff going. I was working full time for Marriott International.
Man, I think getting married is a great thing to do. I've done it 3-4 times, and I think it's good.
Yep.
Having a wife around.
I'm so happy I did it. Obviously.
The one great thing about having a wife is she keeps you from your excesses. You know, she doesn't let you drink too much or smoke too much or talk too loud. She's there to tell you when you're just sort of overstepping. And that's, I find confidence in that, someone to kind of keep me on a leash. I like it.
Larry, you like being on a leash?
No, that's not exactly what he said.
Well, I know, but I thought it was a good question to ask.
That's kind of what I said, but not exactly what I said.
No. Do you keep me too excessive?
Do what now?
Melinda.
Yes.
Do you keep me from excessing?
No, you do that just fine all by yourself. I don't stop you from going off on a rampage or anything.
Well, obviously I couldn't. So I got a lady now that keeps me very well.
Larry's passion now is barbershop.
Barbershop music?
And a quartet as well as with a couple of choruses right now.
Yeah.
Barbershop music.
Yep.
Well, there's more of that around than you would think. We went in a club in someplace we were, and there was a barbershop quartet performing. But I remember at the blind school, at the School for the Blind in Austin, if there were seven guys around, we could sing four-part harmony.
Sure.
I mean, there was just that much talent, and it was no problem to come up with a quartet, you know.
It's funny. Yeah, we've been barbershoppers for over 30 years. Both of us have been. And we've sung in quartets and are singing in choruses and things like that and are very involved administratively. But it's amazing how many blind people have this ear for music. They may not have perfect pitch, but it's relative pitch or, yeah, or pretty close. And I don't know what that is or why that is, but it's true. Blind people, for the most part, love to sing, whether they've been born blind or were blinded later on.
And there are a lot of blind people who can't sing a note, yet they've got perfect pitch, and I never could understand that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I wouldn't believe that, except I went to school with an old boy that was a pretty good fiddle player and had perfect pitch, but he could not sing.
Yeah.
We had a friend who went to school with in grammar school, and he had perfect pitch. I mean, he was dead on, but he couldn't sing and knew he couldn't sing. And we said, how can this be? He said, I have no idea. He said, it's just something that I grew up with. I could always tell you what key you were singing in, but he said, I can't sing.
Well, of course, either one of you play guitar at all?
No, John plays drums. I started looking at playing piano, but I never really got very far with it.
If you play guitar, you can tell by the open chord they make kind of what key they're in.
I guess you could, yeah.
You can, because a G sounds different than a C, and a D is a little short chord, and an A is a chord usually without the fifth note,
uh-huh,
without the bottom note, and you can tell. So I use that a lot. I've got relative pitch. I can get you within a half step. That isn't worth a damn for anything, is it?
Well, no, I can do that, too.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that I can do that, because I'm pretty close. Sometimes I can get you right on with certain keys. Other keys, I can't.
But just some guy, you're standing out, and he says, hum a C. I can always do it within a half step.
That's close.
I'd go a step.
John, have you got a pitch by Danny?
I'd go a step up. Let me find my tuner. Hang on a minute. Let me find my tuner. Can you hear me?
That's not great.
Can you hear me? I'm back here in the back of the studio. The Bob and Ray team, all guests on the Blind Handyman Show, stay at the beautiful Blind Handyman summer home.
You were on.
Oh,
was I on?
Sorry.
Yeah, you were on. Do it
were
again.
You on?
No, blow the one. Not both of them. We don't want a choice.
Well, most of
them
were.
You were a note flat.
You know.
Well, that's the note we hit. To hell with it. That's
ABC
the note we
is
hit.
Paying for this.
That was our note. What?
Somebody's paying for this.
Somebody's. ACB is paying for this, and we're doing dueling pitch pipes.
Well, I don't care. It's not important. ACB can pay for it. I've done a lot of good things for them. They ought to love me.
So now I know I was pretty close.
Okay.
I was pretty close. And
right.
And what's funny is if you had asked, okay, how did you get there? I can't tell you how I got there. I just know kind of what it should sound like and where it should be. But I can't do that with every key. I can do it with four or five of them.
But is that a relationship to where your top and bottom notes are in your singing range?
No. I just say, okay, then it ought to be about
here.
Right. I mean, other people who have legitimate perfect pitch all the way through, I don't know how they find their notes.
Can just hit you an F sharp. This guy in school could just hit me an F sharp. He could just do it, and he'd be right on target.
Huh.
So, basically, you guys thought you were nuts till you heard Jonathan Winters, right?
Oh, I probably have gone beyond that.
I remember Jonathan Winters.
Oh, yeah.
You do remember Jonathan Winters?
Oh, yeah.
One of the funniest. I thought there's something wrong with me till I heard him, and then I realized, well, maybe I'm, not totally nuts. Because he did some extremely funnies. Well, you've probably heard all those old Jonathan Winters albums from
a year ago.
I'm sure there's probably a box set.
Probably.
Which I ought to buy of Jonathan Winters stuff. I tell you what, let's take a little break. Do you all have a little comedy skit or something you could do? You worked up anything for our show? You haven't.
John,
we'll be back in just a moment with more of Blind.
I gotta find a way to get it.
More of Blind Like Me in just a minute. Hang on.
John.
Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's Blindsight, here's Don Shaw.
Thinking about taking a well-deserved vacation? Well, if you might be thinking about something like that, I recently found out about a travel resource you might like on Accessible Travel Information. Covers all types of trips, places to go, things to do. Everything from cruises to train trips to different cities you might want to go to. Talks about all type of handicapped accessible trips, whether you're a blind or a partially sighted person, whether you need it to be wheelchair accessible, whether you're an older person, whatever your needs may be, if you need any special anything, go and take a look at this site. They have a comprehensive listing of some good travel info. Go to www.accesss-able.com. And they even have a text page version of this website. So I would have to give them a screen reader friendliness rating of a 10. Just something to help you plan out that vacation. Until next time, I'm Don Shaw. Keep on web sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
With the John and Larry Gas, with the John and Larry Gasman from in California are you? I didn't ask that. Did
oh, John's in Anaheim. I'm in Buena Park in Orange County.
Which is how far apart are you?
About 3 minutes apart.
Oh, 3 minutes.
Actually,
well, it depends on whether you're using a white cane or not.
That's probably true. We're actually, in terms of geographical perspective, we're about a mile and a half, maybe.
Really?
It takes about 5 to 7 minutes to drive it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to say it's got to be wonderful to be that close to somebody all your life. And you
have
been. That's true. And you have been. All right. Set up what we're going to do and do it. I'll turn my mic off and y'all go.
This is a parody that was written by somebody. First time we ever heard it, I think, was on The Tonight Show. Johnny Carson did this with Jay Silverhills, who was the television Tonto. And
he also did it with Jack Webb.
Did he do it with them both, or am I wrong?
I don't remember now. I know he did it with Webb. He may have done it more than once.
You know, I'm wrong. He did it with Webb. He didn't do it with Jay Silverhills. He did it with Jack Webb, I think.
That's the first time you've been wrong in this interview.
Nah, it's impossible.
Actually, no. I think probably Phil cut out the other parts.
Oh, well, that's good.
I did.
So, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
We usually start it with the Dragnet music. My name is Friday. I'm a cop. I was working the day shift out of robbery when I got a call from the Acme School Bell Company. There had been a robbery.
There's been a robbery?
Yes, sir. What was it?
How's that?
What was stolen, sir?
I run a school bell company. I never had any trouble before. Can't understand it. Just make bells. Never had any trouble,
sir.
Huh?
What was stolen?
My clappers.
Your clappers?
Yeah. You know those things inside the bell that make them ring?
The clangers?
Yeah, that's right. But we in a business here, we call them clappers.
Oh, clapper caper.
What's that?
Nothing, sir. Okay, can I just have the facts? What kind of clappers were stolen on this caper?
They were copper clappers.
And where were they kept?
In the closet.
Uh-huh. You have any ideas who might have taken the copper clappers kept in the closet?
Well, just one. You see, when I fired him, the guy, he swore he'd get even with me.
What was his name?
Claude Cooper. You know, I think Claude Cooper caught my copper clappers.
You know where Claude Copper is from?
Yeah, Cleveland.
That figures.
You know what makes it even more strange? They were clean.
Clean copper clappers?
That's right.
Now, why do you think that Cleveland's Claude Cooper would cop your clean copper clappers kept in your closet?
Only one reason.
What's that?
He's a kleptomaniac.
Well, now, who first discovered the copper clappers were copped?
My cleaning woman, Clara Clifford.
Uh-huh. That figures. Now, let me see if I've got the facts straight here. Cleaning woman Clara Clifford discovered your clean copper clappers kept in a closet were copped by Claude Cooper, the kleptomaniac from Cleveland. Now, is that about it?
One other thing.
What's that?
If I ever catch kleptomaniac Claude Cooper from Cleveland who caught my clean copper clappers kept in a closet,
yes,
I'll clobber him. That's all, Phil.
That's funny. That's good.
You know how tough that is, reading that on a Braille note?
I couldn't.
Yeah, with a phone against your shoulder? Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Somebody should get a photo of that, because that would be a weird thing to put up on the Internet. And, you know, we've done this kind of stuff before because at radio conventions we would do, I forget why, we just started to do this stuff. We did
Who's On First.
Yeah. At radio conventions around the country. And then we were invited to be on a cruise.
And entertain on the cruise?
Twins. A twin cruise, yeah, from Princess Cruises. And we did it there in, where was it? It was on the ship somewhere. I can't remember exactly where. Maybe it was in Panama. So we've done this kind of stuff before and had a good time doing it.
But we've never done it before without audience reaction. And it is a little weird because you're waiting for the laughs and you're waiting for the laughs to die down a little bit.
Yeah.
And it is weird not to have audience reaction.
So you were invited on a twins cruise.
About 1996, there was a twin. We had the Sun Princess, and in about 1997, they decided they were going to inaugurate the Dawn Princess. This is Princess Cruises.
Uh-huh.
And so they put together a thing that said, hey, twins, any twins, we're going to select the top 50 sets of twins. So write in and tell us what's important, what's exciting, what is novel about the fact that you are twins.
And
we didn't know anything about it. We had just had an article written about us in the L.A. Times, and people from Princess Cruises had seen the article, called us, and said, we are doing this contest. Are you aware of it? And we said, no. And they said, well, you really need to get in the contest because we think that you would have a chance to win. Otherwise, we would never have known because I don't think I ever saw it in the paper.
No.
Literally or figuratively.
So that article became our entry into the contest, and we were one of the 50 sets of twins, so we had a chance.
They had over 2,000 sets of twins
right.
who entered.
So
really?
We literally had a chance to go, and we did. They flew us to Fort Lauderdale, Florida in May of 97, and we spent a week doing all kinds of press stuff with the other twins.
They had the Love Boat people come in and inaugurate the Dawn Princess.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went from Fort Lauderdale to the Grand Caymans. From there to Colombia,
mm-hmm.
and there through
the Panama Canal,
and then from Panama Canal to Costa Rica, then over to, it's in Mexico.
God, I can never remember it. It was somewhere in Mexico. I can't remember where it was now. Do you remember?
Once we finish, I will.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can call us back.
Yeah.
We'll insert it into the show. So, but you ended up in California, or you went back around to Florida?
No, they dropped us off in L.A.
Is that right?
Yeah.
See, that'd be the kind of cruise to take, would be from California through the Panama Canal to L.A. We're going on a little, I've been on three or four little cruises, and they're just, for blind people, really neat.
I loved every second of it. Because, you know, after the first day or so, we pretty much had figured out a way to get around the ship. And these are huge ships.
I know.
You know, they scrape going on either side of the Panama Canal. But we didn't necessarily remember where things were on the ship. We remembered levels. And, you know, we would go up to level 11 or 11, 12, and we'd remember what was on that level.
And that's all you have to remember.
Yeah. Yeah, we really had no problems.
I tried to put together a blind handyman cruise.
I remember that.
And we got a few people. We got, I think, 10, 12 couples. But the thing about a ship is they're not going to be a garbage can out in front of you when you're walking down the hall because they just don't do that. And it's just like being in a luxury hotel. I mean, when you walk around on that ship, you could be in the Adolphus Hotel in Kansas City. And you can feel no motion unless you're out on the deck, or unless you can hear the water, you can hear the engines. It's just like being in a big hotel.
Oh, we
absolutely.
We got a chance to drive the ship. We went on board, had photos taken with the captain, and we drove it. And because it's all computerized, I mean, a blind person can't hurt that ship.
Yeah.
At least we tried, but it didn't work. But we had no problems. And we had a great time talking to those people who are just incredible people to talk to because they have a wealth of experience. But I don't think they ever had two blind people come aboard on their bridge and drive the ship. So we had a wonderful time. It was a time I'll never forget.
So you both have had good. And before, to begin with, when you got out of college, did you both go to work for separate companies or separate? What did you do? What have you done for a living all your life?
A lot of it was for the radio show. A lot of it was stuff we've talked about, and you know, looking for employment came.
But did you get paid for this radio show?
From time to time.
From time to time, not continually.
Yeah.
From time to time, and about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, I finally went to work for another company that, it was a cigarette company, and it died about 4 or 5 months later. But as a result of that, I started working for Marriott.
But you didn't cause the death of the company.
What's that?
You didn't cause the death of the cigarette company.
No, I may have helped it along a little bit. I think they were probably on their last gasp shortly after I left. And they left. I got dumped. They fired me and a couple of other people because I think they were probably getting to the point where they were having a hard time keeping their cigarette breath heads above water.
Yeah.
And about 3 or 4 months later, I found out later on that they did hang it up. But right after that, I filled out an application and began to work for Marriott International.
And that's what you do now?
Yeah. I started by, for the first year and a half, I made reservations for people who wanted to get hotel rooms.
So you were just on the phone with 50
yeah.
other people saying
right.
they're making reservations. Okay.
But they had about 20 people who were blind who worked for them.
Oh, really?
Reservation center.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Probably there are 22 of us now who work there. And what I began doing a year and a half or two later, I got promoted. And the guy who was blind who was doing this job before I left to pursue other things. And so what they needed was for me to take over. And what I do is I test all of the software that is written through JAWS so that our people can actually make reservations.
Okay.
It's programmed, it's scripted at our corporate offices, and then they send the scripts via email to me, and I test them to make sure that they work. I make sure all the hotkeys that have been assigned work. I make sure that that it's going to work for them before it gets on the floor. And I also do a lot of training stuff to make sure that all of our training manuals work with all of the specific hotkeys. And it's gotten pretty big over the last several years. We've got about, as I said, 22, 23 blind people who use JAWS, another 4 or 5 who use MAGIC, which is a screen magnification system.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that now for a good year and a half.
So these people are employing in one center 25 blind people.
Absolutely. And we've got other centers, probably 6 or 7 others that have other blind people around the world.
That's knocked out. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll stay at nothing but a Marriott from now on. I mean, that would, you know, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, oh, sure. That'd be. I'd love for you to do that.
I had no idea that
we
could do.
And then as a result of that, about, I guess, a year and a half ago, people from Disney Travel came to us because they'd heard about this. Because nobody hires that many blind people.
Nobody.
When you're talking about a billion-dollar company.
We have lighthouses for the blind that don't hire that many blind people.
Right. Well, Disney Travel came up, and they said, we've heard about this, but we'd like to know more. So we did I was involved in doing a big presentation for them about what we do, how we do it, and the fact that just because you're blind doesn't mean that you're not able to work in a field that's – this is a big multitasking field. You're doing four different things. You're listening to the caller, you're typing, you're listening to JAWS, and you're talking. At the same time. So as a result of that, they said they wanted to begin to hire people at Disney Travel. And John was working as a Braille teacher at Braille Institute in Orange County, and they got in touch with him. And now he's the first blind. John can tell you more about
that. I'm the first totally blind person ever hired at the resort. So now I booked the reservations into the 3 Disney hotels at the resort in Anaheim and answer questions about the resort as well. I've been doing that I've been there about 6 months. So I'm kind of paving the way for other blind people. They have, I think, 3 other blind people that they've hired who use Zoom text, but they haven't hired any other totally blind people yet. They have plans to do that.
But as a result of this, eventually down the road, they're looking at maybe having him do kind of something similar to what I do.
And it's fun. It really is a lot of fun. And
all right, let me stop right here. And what I want to do is stop this interview, and I want to continue this. This will be continued another week because I want to talk to you all about this. I had no idea this was going on. So we'll say goodbye to you on this Blind Like Me.
Goodbye,
and
Phil.
Goodbye. Which one were you?
I'm still Larry.
Well, you're still Larry?
I'm still Larry. I have not changed after all.
And years. John is still John.
Yes, and Melinda's here too. Goodbye. Say goodbye, hon.
Goodbye.
All right, and we'll conclude this, and if you'll listen next week, we'll continue this interview. Thank you very much. I'm Phil Parr. And, of course, we did just that, continued with the Gaspins next week, and we hope you'll join us for Blind Like Me next week. If you would like to be a guest on Blind Like Me, or if you know someone you think would be a good guest, somebody that we could interview, and like I said, we're not necessarily looking for celebrities, although we take them if they happen to come along. We're looking for blind people who are successfully handling this thing that we call being blind. What do we call it? Anyway, that are successfully handling the inconvenience of being blind. That's a better way, isn't it? Our address is blindlikeme@txucom.net. blindlikeme@txucom.net. Or you can write me at my personal email address, which is philparr, lowercase@txucom.net. Or you can call me. If you'd like to do that, my phone number is 936-634-9500. And we don't promise to take everybody who is interested, but we take most people. We don't. One thing we don't want to get into is religion. So if you're pushing some sort of religious belief, don't bother, because I don't want to get off into that or politics. Religion or politics we'll steer away from. Other than that, we'll talk about almost anything on Blind Like Me. blindlikeme@txucom.net. We'll see you next week with a little interview with the Gaspins. And then, and I can't remember who I... Somebody else is on that show. Maybe Jane Jordan, I think, is on that show next week, which I haven't put together yet, but I will. Anyway, join us next week for Blind Like Me. Stay tuned for The Blind Handyman if you're listening on ACB Radio. Thank you much. I'm Phil Parr. Bye-bye.